For July 14th, 2016, it's the Lullabot Podcast. It's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 191. I'm Matt Klee, the senior developer at Lullabot. With me, I have Mike. Don't get bit by a gator, Herschel. Hey, Mike.
Good morning, Matt. How are you doing?
Hey, it's morning. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, every couple of weeks or so, Mike and I get together. We talk something about Drupal or Mike's dog or the internet or web development or something like that.
Alligators,
sometimes. So this week we're going to talk about something that has been developing in Drupal over the last couple of years, and it has to do with learning, which I'm always a fan of.
Yep. We're talking about the ELMS Learning Network. I hope I'm even pronouncing this properly. It might be ELMS Learning Network.
Yeah.
It is a series of Drupal distributions, or one Drupal distributions. It's a network of Drupal distributions that kind of put Drupal into the learning management system realm. So that's exciting.
Mike and I are going to learn all about the ELMS Learning Network alongside the folks who help make it happen.
Yep, and first up, we got Brian Olendike. He is an instructional technology systems developer at Penn State. He is BTO Pro on Twitter, also BTO Pro on Drupal.org, which he has been on D.O for over 11 years and commit credits on over 100 projects. And while I was discovering all of this, I saw this one project that was called Dana. And I didn't know what the hell that was. So I'm going to – so what's up with that?
It's good. You're going to make my wife really happy. So it's actually pronounced Dana like that.
All right.
I had to come up with an acronym that would make a module for Pittsburgh people, basically. So it's I think it's like Drush assign another something. It basically just bulk assigns nodes from an anonymous user to somebody via Drush, but all the prompts are in Yinzer, which is, you know, like a Pittsburghese thing.
Okay.
So it like asks if you want to go down to Donny Iris concert, and then it translates it as like, are you sure you would actually like to switch to these users?
That's pretty awesome.
A little local culture in the Drupal code base. Yeah.
You're in State College in Pennsylvania, correct?
Yes.
Awesome. Cool.
And along with Brian here, we also have Michael Potter, who's the Instructional Technology Systems Developer at Penn State. He's hey__MP on Twitter and heyMP on Drupal.org. He's been there for over 7 years. He's also in State College and is currently wrangling the front-end architecture of the ELMS Learning Network. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how's it going? And I'm currently wrangling Brian as well.
Well, somebody has to.
It's a tough job. Trust me, you don't want it.
I met him like a minute ago, so I feel like I can speak authoritatively on that. So, anyway, so guys, I do have one question. What is a Nittany Lion? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we're not editing this out.
Let's keep that awkward. It's a lion from Nittany.
Of course.
I actually do know the, I believe I know the history on that. It's a very underwhelming story, though.
Okay. It's the mascot of Penn State University.
It is so, the mascot of Penn State. That's cool.
Yeah, for those that don't know.
All right. So these guys are working on the ELMS Learning Network. So maybe we could just kick it off from the high level. What is the system? What's it do? Like, what's the point? What's going on here?
What is an LMS, first of all?
Good question. So LMS is short for Learning Management System. And if you went to school anytime in the last 10-15 years, you probably used one. Typically, the system that manages all the courses at the institution. You might log into a website and you'd see a list of all the classes you're taking. Maybe the instructor posts, PDFs. You have discussion boards there. You might submit assignments or take a quiz there. So it's really helping manage the instructional process.
So it's school on the internet, kind of.
Yes. School on the internet.
It's a system that could work alongside a classroom setting as well as something that's totally remote, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So who uses LMS? Is it mostly schools? Is it used outside of like universities or school environments?
Yeah, so there's a ton of custom ones. There's actually a lot of custom ones built on Drupal in the training space. So workforce training uses them, higher education, K-12 uses them more sparingly. A lot of people are starting to move to like Google products for, you know, replacing that. But yeah, it's mostly the education sector.
Okay. So why did you guys decide to go out on your own and develop your own?
'Cause they all suck.
That's a good answer.
They're all horrendous behemoth technologies that were are patterned off of, you know, the 90s model of factory style education. So I'll try not to pontificate too much about how much I hate them, but a lot of people don't like them because they kind of force you into this one design pattern as far as what you're putting on the internet. They act like they are separate from the internet, generally speaking. They're unwieldy, and really, they cost way too much money and give way too little to institutions.
So what competitors are there? Like, I've heard of Blackboard before. Is that an LMS, or is that something completely different?
Yeah, so Blackboard for about 10, 15 years owned the market.
Okay.
Pretty exclusively. There's a newer player called Canvas, which is gaining traction in a lot of schools. Our school's adopting that as well. There's probably five or six major ones. The biggest open source one would be Moodle, which is its own PHP community, but unfortunately Blackboard owns two or three of the major companies contributing to it, so gets a little weird there as well.
So you guys, you've forged ahead and developed the ELMS Learning Network, which I understand is an acronym, ELMS.
I'm going to dominate talking the first little bit here because Michael jumped on the project afterwards. So ELMS used to stand for just e-learning management system. So we've got so much damn learning in this system that we had to put it in there twice. So ELMS, if you go to drupal.org/project/ELMS, you'll see a thing saying, hey, you don't want this, you want ELMS Learning Network. ELMS was the first distribution I ever made. It was in Drupal 6, and all of the work is derivative of work that I was doing internally about 8 years ago now. I work at the eLearning Institute at Penn State College of Arts and Architecture, and so part of where the name came from, there's lots of ELMS trees around campus, so we like to play on the more organic nature of the architecture and things as a result, but the learning network side came from a total refactoring of everything. After, I believe it was DrupalCon Denver, I still wasn't to the point that I was satisfied with the ELMS Drupal 6 architecture, and I was really questioning leaving the industry entirely. I was had an existential crisis. And then, like all good ideas, I took a shower one day and started thinking about the way that things should work, which was, you know, if I had a system and I needed to get data from one place to another, God, wouldn't it be amazing if everything was RESTful and REST capable? Mm-hmm. And so I doodled some on a whiteboard, and by some I mean probably for about 2 months of just planning things, and then basically went to my boss at the time and said, I need space to just build this, and we need to basically abandon everything I've done the last year and a half. And only in higher education would anyone say yes. ELMS Learning Network's about 3 years into development at this point. Based off of what was initially set up at the College of Arts and Architecture. And your initial description is correct. It is a network of Drupal distributions. So we use a baseline distribution that we kind of fork the rest of them from. And our baseline distribution has a certain look and feel, makes certain assumptions about the roles that you're going to have, the fact that things have, you know, organic groups built in. It's kind of a core above core approach to a distribution. And then each of the different tools in the network kind of fork from there. So we'll have our baseline of, hey, we're building a thing, and then if this thing has to do with course content, we focus a lot more on, you know, including projects that improve WYSIWYG editing, improve template, you know, injection, improve layout and things like that, and content presentation, or also use, you know, modules like the book module, outline designer, things like that, versus if we want to build a student studio submission platform, we're going to build a lot more of the social tools into it. You know, students are going to have their own content types they can submit and things like that.
And it just shoots data back between everything with JSON?
Yeah, so everything has this little, like, diverging arrows icon, and the idea is that you can embed anything anywhere else in any format, and then the system caches the call, like a rendered call, if you will, in a Drupal cache bin to minimize the REST request the next time.
So help me make this a little more tangible. You've talked about having a couple of different distributions. Explain that, and like and name a couple of them and explain how they might interact.
Yeah, so there wow, yeah, do it more tangibly. Okay, so do you have any familiarity with like Eager?
Eager was the system that spooled up Drupal sites magically from like 7 years ago or something.
No, it is a system. It's still active.
Oh yeah, it's still active.
Yeah, very active.
There you go.
That's it was as well.
Okay.
So yeah, if you envision, our system also has a Eager-esque. You know, you set it up. You're setting up a server architecture. It's doing a lot of sysadmin work for you. It's when we install, it actually installs Drupal core, I believe, 13 times at this point, and starts to set up the different systems, and then networks them together, automatically authoring modules to do the REST calls securely, so that they're unique to each box, things like that. Then you log into the first system, which is, it's online dot, you know, whatever your network is, so it's online.elmsln.local if you're doing Vagrant-based development, which we do a lot of. That site is kind of your Eager equivalent, if you will, how you have a Drupal site that orchestrates and builds other Drupal sites. The major difference on our side is that these sites are all related to courses that you're offering. And so when you go to build a course, you're actually selecting the other systems that you want to add. Now, these systems relate to pedagogy and, you know, the way you want to teach. So you're going to select, you know, if I set up a course, I'm not actually setting up a Drupal site. I'm setting up potentially 5-6 different Drupal sites. And so some of those, each of those is a distribution. So some of those might be like, we have a content outline. So that's kind of your pacing, your flow. Here's the material. If you think of like an online textbook, we might want students to submit something. And so we have another tool called a studio environment, which allows students to critique each other, give feedback, submit assignments, things like that. So that would be a second system. We have a third system that's discussion forums. I think it's terrible at the moment, but it exists. We also have a blogging platform, which again I think is terrible, but it exists. Right. So it's the idea is these you've got these different little tiny chunks, all of which exist in learning management systems. But because they're designed as these huge systems that can only do one purpose, they're very slow moving. Versus our multi-distro approach allows us to drive drastically in any one direction without impacting negatively the other directions.
So how many, like say in a typical environment, how many different Drupal sites are running?
Potter, do you know how many sites you have on your box?
I believe I have 86.
Holy wow.
Yeah.
How many classes is that?
That's serving about 130 different sections.
Okay.
And I have, I don't know, probably north of 120 at this point, but that's only on our newer architecture. Our legacy architecture has another 60 or so.
Now, is this utilizing multi-site or anything, or these are just completely separate Drupal installs?
So it's kind of doing both.
Okay.
So it is a multi-site, but the way we set it in motion is that it's using DSLM, which is Drush Symlink Manager.
Okay.
And that allows you to have one symlinked copy of Drupal core pushed around. And so each of the different tools lives at a certain domain and they follow the same pattern. So we're working on scripts that would allow you to basically run the command on one server and go, oh, you know what? We're going to break off the courses part of our multi-site and we're going to ship it over to this server. And because we're following the same pattern, because the databases are all named in the same convention and code's located the same place, and all the calls are assumed as web service calls, we can break that off to another server. And kind of it allows for a scaling pattern where you start really small with limited resources and are able to expand into larger amounts of resources instead of having to plan and say, we need $100,000 server budget today, when you don't have any students, potentially.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So I guess to illustrate one of the advantages, tangible advantages of having a system like that, is you have all the benefits of maintaining a mass amount of multi-sites, but if you wanted to diverge one of those, you can very easily do that without, you know, the fear of wrecking the whole system. So if I sit down with a faculty member and they really like the studio, but they want to tweak the submission process and they want to change maybe the administrative dashboard and they want to add a couple new roles, I can do that without worrying about how that's what that's going to affect across the whole system.
Because it's Drupal under the hood, right? You can always expand and change the way things work.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're a Drupal developer, you know, used to just, you know, downloading modules and you know, prototyping on the fly, this system works great for that because, you know, at the end of the day, it's its own individual Drupal site.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, I'm in a college town also, and from all my friends that work at the university here, my understanding is that, like, every single professor is kind of a special snowflake and like things their own way. So I don't know if that's similar up at Penn State.
Yeah, that's pretty universal.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
It's universal, and it's also, if you've seen our logo, it basically looks like a snowflake. It's a network diagram. For that reason, right? So faculty, you know, whether you say it in a negative context or not, I don't use it in a negative context, but everyone technically is this own little snowflake. Like, you know, if you think of tenure track faculty, they're an expert in, you know, 0.001% of the global population's knowledge base. So they are, by definition, a snowflake. And they have, you know, unique way of looking at the world. That's why they've got the job they do and the research that they have is interesting to, you know, to people. And so the platform really allows us to leverage that. As Mike said, you know, it's a perfect example. We have someone that wants to try something new. If you were to take that to a single behemoth system LMS implementation team, they'd be like, yeah, put it in the queue. Have fun. We're able to go, yeah, sure, let me spin up a site. Click a checkbox. There it is. Oh, you want to do that? Okay, and we're start, you know, doing content type modeling, layout modeling, and can really crank out, you know, prototypes to get a conversation going about what they're trying to get at very quickly. Unlike any other system I've ever seen, we actually have students, faculty, instructional designers, sysadmins, staff, K-12 members, training space members, all participating in a GitHub issue queue.
That's awesome.
So, you know, and we've also, Michael's going to be doing this a similar thing soon, but we spent the last year prototyping while the course was going on with one of our classes. And so every 3 weeks we debrief with the students in this class and ask what worked well, what would they like to see added, you know, what talk through their workflows. And we did this with graphic design-minded students. So they're talking about usability workflows and things and saying, hey, I did these steps, this didn't work. And by the end of, you know, the experiment, if you will, they started asking for things we didn't do. And we're like, oh, just go use the LMS. They're like, yeah, we don't want to. because it's really, it's about, you know, control and you know, innovation and tailoring to needs, and it's something that our platform allows you to have the flexibility to do just because of the architecture.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I think Drupal probably makes a pretty good fit there too, right? I mean, as far as the flexibility that is offered, you know, the proverbial snapping of Legos together. You know, you're talking about the professors or the classes or whatever having their Snowflake needs, but that's no different than any of the client work that Mike, you or I do throughout the day. It's, you know, they're all putting content on the internet. It's just they have their own special way of doing it.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw Dries's blog post a while ago. He was talking about kind of branding Drupal for ambitious websites, you know, and I thought that was just a really great adjective. Because Elm sounds very ambitious to me, you know, it's a tough problem to solve.
Yeah, I mean, it's whenever you first approach, you know, a problem like this, you know, you sort of think that you can go down, you know, like a fork in the road, and you can either go down the, all right, well, we're just going to make this the same for everybody just so that we can maintain it. Or, you know, we'll just do individual website for everybody, and we'll just, you know, hire new people and get, you know, a massive amount of hardware. But this is really what Drupal has allowed us to do is it has all the infrastructure for us to automate as much as possible, and then very quickly just sitting down with somebody and asking what their needs are, building out content models and views and workflows right with them. So it's really the perfect blend.
Yeah, and rapid iteration. You know, the whole 3-week thing sounds a lot like almost like the, you know, reminds me of like Scrum and stuff like that, you know, and it sounds pretty fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that studio example that I referred to earlier, you know, that was a real thing. You know, about a month ago, we sat down with a professor who said, hey, I have this this pedagogical, did I say that right, Brian?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Okay.
First of all, you need to define this word.
So I can't define it.
I'd prefer Michael try to. That would be-
So the pedagogy is a sense of oh my gosh.
This is good. Yeah, edit this part out.
Oh, we'll see.
It's learning about learning, right? Isn't that kind of the...
It's your teaching philosophy, you know, the way you're going to instruct people, basically.
Yeah, and what the best process of, you know, teaching a student this information. So it with each topic, it can vary different. It can vary widely. So that's why the one monolithic LMS has been so problematic for so many years. It's because they try to go the opposite way of shoehorning their class into this very specific workflow where we're trying to do it the opposite. About a month ago, I sat down with a professor and they said, you know, we don't know if this is possible, but we have a very popular class right now. The way it works is, you know, students submit blog posts and they review each other, and it's for a math course. So there's, you know, math ML code that has to be generated in these blog posts, and they have to comment on each other's blog posts, and they have to do blind critiquing of each other's work. And not only that, we have to in a month or in a few weeks, we have to teach about 29 instructors how to use this new system that hasn't been developed yet, because they're going to teach it in the fall. So typically you would just say, you know, sorry about your luck, because that's not possible. But with a system like this, we took a look at a tool that was already in use, which was the studio that was already in Elms. It had a lot of the features like student submissions and critiquing each other's work. But so we just needed to tweak the workflow a little bit. So I spun up a new instance of the studio, and I just dove in, started adding new content types, added a couple new custom modules to put a nice Angular dashboard in there, and some custom some new custom workflows. And within 3 weeks, we gave them a system that they then went and taught 29 new instructors on how to use.
Pretty impressive.
I heard Brian's talking about the Elms LN at a previous Drupal camp. And one of the things that I thought he was pretty interesting was when he answered, you know, his own question, you know, do you use media module, which is one of the common sticking points. It's just, no, we have these other lightweight things. We just plug in and make work. It seems like it's a pretty good architecture to do that fast and light and able to iterate.
Yeah. And we have to the media thing, we have an asset management system that's part of the stack. We actually have two, one for what I consider crazy stuff, and then one for more traditional types of assets like video, audio, images, stuff like that.
So what constitutes crazy stuff?
So the crazy stuff one, currently you can upload zip files that it will unpack, which is useful for like SCORM, which is an educational standard because we're snowflakes on the internet. Mm-hmm. And also you can build timelines in the system by adding content type or a node type of timeline date and then assemble those. And it uses timeline JS, which is a views output module to allow you to assemble different timelines. There's also polling in that system. So we kind of stuff some weirder things in it. Another reason for the architecture being the way it is that, because people ask me all the time about Drupal 8, and I go, yeah, I'll get there. I'll get there in pieces. I'll get there in, hey, we've got an upgrade path for just our asset management system. Because as long as it's REST capable and it can interpret our, we use these little short codes, and the short codes make web service calls and then embed what was supposed to be there. So the different sites don't care what's on the other end.
Yeah.
As long as it's giving back a response. I've been looking at also pulling in Grab CMS, if either you're familiar with Grab CMS.
No, what is that?
It's a flat file CMS. Mm-hmm. That rips everything to markdown files. So I actually think it's kind of a WordPress killer because it has no database and it's written in Symfony. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty sweet. And because, you know, then I immediately go, well, shoot, if this is written in Symfony, then I get access to console, then I get access to the way things are going with Drupal 8 in general. You know, this is kind of right in our wheelhouse. But as long as whatever the thing I'm calling returns JSON or, you know, XML, I don't care.
Yeah, I've heard of Sculpin before, which is also like I think it's a Symfony-based flat file CMS. At least I know it uses Twig. I'm assuming it's Symfony-based, but
you brought a huge smile to my face when you mentioned SCORM. That was actually an early client project I did years ago, pre-Lullabot, was a SCORM integration. I forgot about the unpacking the zip files. You unpack a zip file and you get a bunch of XML and you parse your XML and do stuff.
It is. That was actually like day one, people asking why we don't have support for it. And I've always taken a hard line of, if you want to pull in your crap you made in the 90s, that's great. But we're trying to build something actually for, you know, fun and next generation learning.
Yeah. This was, I think, Microsoft learning subscription website or something. You can sign up and watch the videos about how to learn Excel or something. Good times. Good times. We're talking with Michael Potter and Brian Olendijk, the folks who are behind the Elms Learning Network, Penn State. We'll learn more about it coming up right after this. Hey, it's Matt Westgate, CEO and co-founder of Lullabot. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Matt. How's it going?
It's good. You know, it's good. We're talking Tugboat, the new product Lullabot's rolled out to help out people's web development experiences.
Yeah, it's a pull request builder for Drupal and other CMSs. Although it works with GitHub and Bitbucket, and the idea is every time you make a pull request as a developer, Tugboat is chugging away in the background and building out a complete working website for you, so you can actually see what your code is doing and share it with others and even non-technical people. Just send them a link and they can check out the work and give you immediate feedback.
I'm using Tugboat on a project right now, and I'm really enjoyed how it's changed the QA experience, because it's our QA team could look at one particular change on a Tugboat environment and say, oh, this doesn't work. Oh, this does work. And it's definitive because it's, you know, that one change is getting tested, not a bunch of changes on a QA server.
It's one thing to look at a screenshot in a ticket and try and figure out if it's really working, or, you know, you can't really figure out if it's responsive that way, especially if it is a responsive ticket that you're trying to fix. So the idea is by actually creating the website with a new code in it and being able to click around, it makes it super easy for people to test the changes. And we just actually rolled out a new feature in Tugboat.
What?
We have multi-site for Drupal now. So Tugboat has a UI. You can add in your multi-sites and build out different instances for each of the multi-sites you have if you use that component of Drupal.
Neat. So if somebody wants to learn more, they can go to the website. It's tugboat.qa.
That's right. You can go there. You can see a video of what Tugboat does. And if you're interested, reach out to us. We'd love to show you how it works and see how it would apply to your specific setup.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks.
Welcome back. We're talking Elms Learning Network, which is a Drupal LMS network with the folks who created it.
For learning.
Yeah, for learning and stuff. It sounds pretty awesome. Sounds very easy to extend and iterate on it. So tell me, is Elms 100% open source?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, Elms is. We try to use exclusively open source tools within. I don't know how you'd say it, within our ecosystem.
Yeah.
So, you know, we, in addition to Elms, we also use some products like we have a learning record store that some of us deploy to capture some of the data from our quizzing. And that is built on Learning Locker, so an open source solution. We also use H5P for our quizzing, and that's an open source solution.
Okay. So Penn State is the supporting organization in this. Is that correct? Are there any other universities or colleges out there using this, or are there any contributing?
The primary development is at Penn State. Started in arts and architecture, spread from there to Eberly College of Science, which is where Mike works. It's mm-hmm. also at the College of Business and two other colleges internally. There is a group at Madison, Wisconsin, that I did some development work for it and, you know, set up a while ago. They manage a few classes and training things with it, but I haven't heard from them in a while, so I wouldn't say they're exactly active. And then we have a active user who has poured a lot of money into having a company, you know, spin this up for them in the UK. Their Buttercups Training, which is just a hilarious name, I love saying. They do medical training
mm-hmm.
Online. So they put a lot of additional thought work into it, asked a lot of questions, asked for functionality, bug tested, brought in their own additional functionality, some of which has been brought back into the project. So that's unfortunately it.
What's the big barrier to get this in other colleges? You know, there's a lot of higher ed institutions that obviously use Drupal. Why aren't they using Elms?
It's only really been usable, I'd say. Mike can speak to it because he's, you know, Mr. Frontend, but I would say that it's been usable for about 6 months.
Since I got here.
Since Mike.
That's just coincidence, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, terrible, horrific design.
Okay.
Previously, I've also spent, I probably spent a good 2 years just doing infrastructure and testing type of stuff. And so, like, the ball is rolling now, and we're getting a lot more people interested because it's something you can actually have a conversation around when you have a good UI, and you go, hey, look, I click these buttons, and you know what? 99.9% of the world doesn't care what's going on. They care about how easy is this to use. You know, hey, I copy and paste your one-line installation script into a DigitalOcean server, and it didn't work. And if it didn't work that one time, you're probably never coming back. If it did, you're probably sticking around, right? So it's been a lot of getting a lot of the sysops out of the way, making sure it's sustainable, maintainable, coming up with a strategy for this, because we really didn't have anything to look to. I mean, this is a little beyond traditional Drupal distributions. And so it kind of explaining, you know, in the marketing side, that is an issue for any distribution, quite honestly, but kind of playing a long strategy.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've seen it firsthand. I've seen, you know, Brian demo this to some learning designers, and, you know, the bulk of the magic of Elms happens without you seeing it. So, you know, you can show somebody, hey, you can spin up a site just like this, and you know, and what you aren't seeing is that it's automatically networking all the sites together so that it all can communicate back, and that you're sharing your roster information and your users, and the roles are all syncing up. And, you know, it's not very sexy. So it's a tough sell without, you know, showing somebody, ooh, that UI looks beautiful.
I will say that now that the UI does look rather beautiful, and we've made a lot of efforts there, some of the biggest, you know, interest we've had very recently is because we're demoing a lot of Learning Locker and H5P stuff. H5P lets you build interactive HTML5 widgets in the browser that are completely open source. The builder is completely open source. The byproducts are completely open source. So that's
describe what that actually means inside of your experience. I didn't get it until I looked at the H5P website. So just kind of explain it to me real quick.
Yeah, so it's H5P is authorware, and authorware is really popular in learning design and development communities. Basically, if you think of like a structured version of Flash, where you would say like, hey, I want to put a button here, and when they click the button, it's going to go to the next slide, or I want to put a quiz here, and it's got 8 questions, and then, you know, I want to put a video here, right? So it lets you do that stuff very quickly, and it's responsive. It's HTML5. It works on all devices. It's got a community of its own and some backing, and it also emits what are known as XAPI statements. And so, because the activities are emitting XAPI, you can track what people are doing with them and how they're engaging with them, what they answered, if they got stuff right, if they bothered to watch your video. All that stuff comes off of them, and then you can collect them in Learning Locker or another open source learning record store.
Yeah, and it's not just creating videos. I mean, you're talking about you can create, you can upload a video and then add, you know, hotspots for the user to click on. You can pause the video and have the students answer 3 questions, and if they answer them right, they can move on. They can keep the video playing. So these are really complex learning modules.
Yeah, that was where it kind of made sense. I saw the, you know, their demonstration that was like the quiz in the middle of the video. I'm like, oh, that's how that could be done. That's something that I had seen before, but never thought about how somebody actually built that. So there's some cool technology that you were able to integrate. What kind of resources do you have at Penn State as far as people working on this? Or are there others involved? Or, you know, how many people are working on the project?
So, right now, Brian is the most prolific Elms developer on campus, and I am probably second up. We have one other developer in another college that has helped us out a lot, even though they don't even use Elms. They just think it's a really cool project and love Drupal. So it's actually pretty scarce. We have to, as developers around here in higher education, we typically work by ourselves. That's a common theme around education, is usually have these, you know, lone developers all around different campuses spread throughout different departments. So we have to, as individual developers, really fight to use Elms and develop with Elms. Now, you know, I'm lucky enough to be in a college that supports that, but some developers really had to fight uphill.
You made that sound pretty bleak, Mike.
Did I?
let's try again. There's one full-time developer. There's you, who is full-time with a large dedication to the project. I am hiring a second full-time developer, and I have two students, one of whom is currently full-time doing development work. Then we have a lot of other people, you know, like instructional designers and faculty that have a more ancillary, you know, submitting features, testing things by using them type of a role. But I'd say there's like 2.5 full-time developers currently, soon to be 3.5.
Gotcha. I just gave you a peek behind the curtain.
Yes, you did.
So there are other learning management solutions at Penn State as well that you guys are kind of competing with. I mean, does that make sense? Is that fair?
So there is that perception with some people, but it's a much more complementary type of relationship. So Penn State as a whole is transitioning from an LMS called Angel, which is 16 years old.
Yikes.
16 years old. It got implemented when I started my freshman year at Penn State in 2002. So it gives you a good idea of how long these monoliths last. Research says most of them are 5 to 8 years that a university will use the same system. So now the university is transitioning to a system called Canvas. And there was a lot of that perception that you just, you know, brought up of like, well, should we keep doing this? Should we, you know, keep supporting this? And actually, as people started to use Canvas, it increased interest in what we were doing, because people saw, you know, they saw the monolith. They saw, I can't make changes to this, and I want to do something that this doesn't support. So then immediately they come back to, you know, it's kind of like they deal with all the crap that, you know, like the copy and paste and the put your file up here type of issues. And we get to deal with all the really cool, fun, you know, tricky types of questions that come up. So it's a much more complementary relationship. As our feature set expands, I think you start to get a lot more people going, hey, this could just run on its own. And as more groups do just run it on its own with nothing else, that'll come up more and more, but it's, we've positioned ourselves in a complementary role because, you know, you don't have to use all the tools in Elms Learning Network. You could just use the one or two that you kind of need to augment your experience somewhere else.
So let's talk about one of the pain points that generally happens around distributions, and that's updates. So when you update the distribution, or maybe some Drupal module inside or outside of the distribution gets updated or has a security fix, you've got to go fix that in a lot of sites. How do you guys handle that, or how does that get handled in the system?
The way that we actually have on our GitHub, every commit is hooked up to Travis CI, which will spin up I think two servers and test the network, install Elms and test the networking. So what we'll do is, let's say that there's a major security release coming, hint.
In 5 minutes.
So once that comes down the pike, what we'll do is we will with Git check it in. We have some local instances of Elms that we develop on, so we'll quickly test those out and make sure that it doesn't break anything. Push those up to GitHub, where Travis CI will run through its build and start to test the networking and make sure that it didn't break any of the major networking. Then once everything checks out, I'll hop into the production environment, do a Git pull, and we have a series of magical Drush scripts that are tied to this command line interface, lovingly called Leafy. So in Elms, you can type Leafy on your server, and you'll get a prompt of a bunch of different things you can do, whether you want to back up your sites, update your server settings, run Drush recipes. And one of those will be to pull and update Elms core from your repo.
I mean, much like distributions in general, you know, you can go, you know, it's the next day and I need to patch everything. But we obviously, you know, kind of incentivize sticking on the versions and upgrading to our tagged releases and stuff. Like all of our sites are in, all of our systems are in Git, and then we update from there. Which, yeah, I mean, that issue is, it's one that, you know, still exists. We do have recommendations, you know, if you're going to hot swap upgrade, like some people are about to in 3 minutes now, then, you know, just make sure you update the same project in the same location. It's not like we're not going to, you know, do those patches with our releases as well.
And for clarity, just for some context here, we're recording this on Wednesday, and it's the Wednesday that the security team sent out the PSA announcement that there would be a security fix for a contributed module or modules that might be serious. So that's why the countdown is on. We'll see. To be fair, they also did say that it may not affect, it will not affect everybody. Guys, if I go to drupal.org/project/elmsln, let's see, I can click on download it from GitHub, because it looks like you're not using the package manager on drupal.org. So I go to your GitHub, and what do I have here? This doesn't look like anything that I'm familiar with. What am I looking at?
So you're asking what the H is this infrastructure?
Exactly, github.com/elmsln/elmsln.
Yes. So this is a special packaging setup, so that we kind of took a page from Drupal 8 and said our application will live in the core directory, because elmsln is, it's server tech. It's, you know, it's going to, it has single line installation scripts that'll go and set up PHP, Apache, all that good stuff, and then start to put itself in the right location, set up your cron tab and all that. So if you're looking for what looks more like Drupal, if you go into core and then DSLM code, you start to get a little closer to what might resemble Drupal. This is using DSLM, which is Drush Symlink Manager, and this allows you to do manage your Drupal cores independent of your profiles, independent of your modules. And why that's useful is that, you know, Drupal 7.50 is out. If I want to drop it in a directory next to the cores/Drupal-7, I can then switch between versions via the symlinks and do that test on just an individual site in the multi-site, if you will. So it's a non-traditional multi-site, but it's still leveraging a lot of the code sharing capabilities of a multi-site. If you go into stacks from there, you'll see each of these is actually looks a lot more like a copy of Drupal core that you're used to. It has profiles, it has sites, all modules, all that good stuff. But we're also, because of the way it's set up, we're able to share, you know, one copy of views across the 15 or so tools that are in here. I had to do this because I did some testing and started to find even just me managing 15 copies of views in the code base is a lot of code. But also I did some performance metrics and saw a large drop in memory usage on the system by using this architecture.
So if you were to get a call from Joe's University in Joestown, Joesville, and they said, hey, I want to bring this to my school, how quickly can that be done?
Well, we have installation scripts for the different flavors of Linux. We also have a Vagrant image, so, you know, people can play around with it there pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got a lot of sample modules as well for the integration points. For example, it comes with built-in support for Bakery, which Bakery is a Drupal single sign-on module that Drupal.org uses, and yeah, That's how you log into groups.drupal.org with the same account.
And that's how you keep all the different sites, you know, in sync with users.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so keeps that, you know, for if you're just getting it and playing with it, that keeps you in sync. That also keeps you signed in automatically as you go between sites. And so the experience starts to become seamless, that you stop for thinking that you're on multiple sites very quickly. But we have a lot, we don't use that. We use an internal single sign-on mechanism with the university. So we have a lot of example codes, you know, that does the integration and things like that. As far as how quickly you can get going with it, you know, that's, you know, how quickly you can get people using any new thing. I'm much more apt to play with stuff and mess around. Michael might be able to speak to that as well, but it was already at least in place when he got there.
Yeah, all the heavy lifting had been done already, so that was good for me. I think I was in DrupalCon LA, and I wasn't working in Elms in any capacity, and I just kept hearing every time someone I mentioned I was from Penn State, they're like, "Oh, you get to work on Elms," and I was like, "I should probably start working on Elms more." So I found a college that was using it, and here I am.
Yeah, I guess that speaks to how big Penn State is as a university, right? You got so many things going on, you weren't even aware of it, right?
We used to do a site inventory, but there's easily over 1,000 Drupal sites at Penn State. We've run our own internal camps before that would have over 100 people come. Wow. I'd say about half of them are developers or site builders in some capacity. So yeah, we have a pretty massive community here.
Brian, do you have any final thoughts or any looks at the future?
Looks at the future. Well, I'm very excited. We're going to be hiring another full-time person to be working on this soon.
Hint, hint, somebody should apply, right?
Hint, hint, somebody should apply. Yes. We're going to be talking about Elms and doing a first ever global Elms sprint at Drupal Camp PA in Pittsburgh, which is on July 30th and 31st. So we'll have people in from Canada, the UK, someone from California, some from State College, and then there'll be at least five or six of us that I know of at Pitt University in Pittsburgh sprinting. So that's what I'm looking most forward to, for sure.
Same question, Michael. Final thoughts? Any thoughts about the future?
Yeah, we got a long way to go, but we're really starting to make some great headway into the front end landscape with Elms. We're starting to do a lot with Angular, which is very exciting. They hopefully get some new developers on it just because of the Angular aspect and the fact that everything's REST. A lot of front enders like that. So yeah, there's some really cool changes coming.
Super. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I dropped off. I don't know if you guys.
Hey, Mike, your audio is awful. You sound like T-Pain.
I'm nettering that, whatever reason.